Well, good morning to everyone. It's a beautiful morning, a wonderful day. We have a full room of people. We have a lot of our local members here to worship God, but of course there are a lot of family and friends traveling through as well. Today is Father's Day, and we certainly wish a blessed and happy Father's Day to all the dads and grandpas. My dad can't be here today. He had a procedure this last week, and he's at home, but I wish him one as well. And just so thankful to be a husband and a father and to be a part of that. And if the Lord is willing, tonight at 6 p.m., we will be back for the purpose of worship and Bible study, and I want to share with you a lesson revolving around the idea of what it means to be a godly husband and father, and maybe a few sort of subcategories under those titles that can really help us do just terrific things for the sake of our family. So if God gives us this evening, tonight we'll focus more on the gentleman, but for the purpose of this morning, just a really wide open question that should apply to every person. In Matthew chapter 22, someone asked Jesus this question: what is the greatest commandment in the law? Do you remember Jesus' answer? He gave what we would call a two-part response, didn't he, in Matthew chapter 22? He said, first, above all else, love God. Love God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. And the second command is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. Of all of the 600 plus unique commands in the law of Moses, all of it can effectively be summed up in just five words: love God and love your neighbor. If you are willing to do just these two things, everything else that Moses ever taught, every booming instruction from the mountaintop will be instantly fulfilled under these two. In fact, if you might quickly turn back to Exodus chapter 20, you may remember that in the very beginning of Moses' law, there were what we call the Ten Commandments. These Ten Commandments have been recorded and recited. They may even be on some plaque in your hallway somewhere. And they are as follows. The first one, in chapter 20 and verse 3, have no other gods before me. Verse 4, do not make for yourselves an idol. Verse 7, do not take the Lord's name in vain. And verse 8, remember His Sabbath day. How many of you know you can sum up the first four commands in two words? Love God. When you love God, those four things will naturally follow. Look at the six commands that follow that. He goes on to say in verse 12, honor your father and your mother. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not lie. And do not covet. Six unique commands summed up three words: love your neighbor. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Upon this hangs the entire law. But what about now? We don't live under that law. We live under the law of Christ. That ought to give it away a little bit. It was Christ in Matthew 22 who said these are the greatest two commandments. And so what would you say are the greatest commandments in the Christian dispensation? Five words: love God, love your neighbor. Now, I don't know about you, but I find one of these a lot easier than the other one. Now, I don't mean that loving God is always easy in the sense that in 1 John chapter 5, the Bible says if you love God, you should keep His commandments. I do not always keep the commandments of God, so you could say that my love for God is often deficient. But the idea of loving a benefactor, our great Creator who sacrificed His Son, one who is perfect and whose loving kindness is everlasting, is easy, isn't it? God is easy to love. He always does the right things. He always has my best interest at heart. He is wonderful and gracious, and He forgives me every time. I love to love God. I think it's easier than the other one. But it's that love your neighbor stuff that I find much more challenging. You see, my neighbor is sort of everything God is not. And by the way, by my neighbor, I include myself in that. I am also a neighbor to the people around me. Neighbors make mistakes. Neighbors don't always get it right. Neighbors do not always have your best interest at heart. Neighbors do not always forgive like they should. Neighbors commit sin just like me, who is also a neighbor. And so to love my neighbor as myself is really, really tough. And I think that's probably why Jesus uses a lot of his ministry talking about how to love your neighbor. Love the people who are close to you. Love your Jewish brethren, if that's the heritage from which you are. Love the Gentiles who would come into the church later. Love, Matthew 5, even your enemies, and pray for them. Because we're going to need a lot of coaching on this. Last week I preached to you a lesson entitled Increase Our Faith. I believe my faith can grow, and I believe Jesus is the one who can make it grow. Well, we're going to test that theory this morning. Because we want to let God increase our faith in the concept of what it means to love thy neighbor. But we get some help. Open your Bibles with me to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. Jesus gives that same first and second commandment answer in Luke chapter 10 that he gave in Matthew 22. It's just a different setting. In Matthew 22, they were asking what is the greatest command in the law. This just a little bit different. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 25, a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, "What is written in the law? How does it read to you?" And interestingly enough, it is the lawyer who gives the right answer. He gets it as well. He answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." He's quoting from Leviticus and Deuteronomy, just like Jesus quoted from those same passages in Matthew's account. And Jesus said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." I'm just here to tell you that message will not fluctuate today. Do this and you live. Love God with all your heart, serve your neighbor as yourself, and you will live. But this lawyer is a lot like a lot of other people I know, especially the guy I see in the mirror every once in a while, who knows the law very, very well, but sometimes comes deficient on living that law. Hey, you asked me earlier this week or last week, what are the two greatest commandments? I got that. It's five words. Even somebody with a memory like mine can memorize five words. But if you're asking me what it looks like or how I put it on display, I might find that a little more challenging. Well, that's kind of where Jesus is with this. He comes back and he says, "You've answered correctly," verse 28, "do this," also quoting Leviticus here and Exodus, "do that and you live." And then this is really interesting. But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" This lawyer is an interesting character. Firstly, he approaches Jesus kind of testing him. I think he's trying to catch Jesus in something. His motives are not particularly pure. We learn that in verse 25. And of course, Jesus turns that question into a question, and we just read all that. And so I think now he's going to kind of save face by saying, "At least I can make myself look good." So he says, "Jesus, who is my neighbor?" And here's how I picture this. There's this lawyer, nicely adorned, and he's got all of his buddies with him. He got all of his people, his inner circle together, all the people he's closest to, and he said, "Hey, y'all follow me. I'm going to go test Jesus. Watch this." Well, he tries that, and he fails. So now he just wants to make himself look good, and he says, "All right, Jesus, so who is my neighbor?" And I think here's what he's expecting Jesus to say. "Sir, your neighbor, all these people around you, all of your friends and all of your buddies, and can I just say really quickly, sir, that you are the most wonderful neighbor I've ever seen. You are the kindest lawyer. You're the most sincere guy. You treat people around you so beautifully. Boy, if I could just go around as Jesus the Christ preaching who a neighbor is, I think I'd just carry you with me in my pocket. You're the best neighbor ever." I think that's what this guy was expecting. He wanted to be self-justified. He wanted him to look at all of his inner circle of friends and say, "You're the best friend a best friend could possibly have." But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus is about to enlighten this man to a concept that I think every Christian in this room, while you may already know it, would do well to increase your faith to consider. That our neighbors, are you ready for this? Punchline. Our neighbors, whom we are to love, is more than just our inner circle of friends. I'm going to try to stay away from the bubble imagery this week, but I would call it an us bubble if I was going to use it. Instead, we're going to call it your inner circle, the people who are closest to you. And then you have that sort of intermediate circle, your brethren that you come in contact with, your friends that you see every once in a while, Facebook friend number 912 from 1983. But then outside of that is this sort of vague category of human beings whom you do not know. Who is my neighbor? It's a bigger circle than you might consider. Watch this. He tells this story. In verse 30 and following, I think you will know it well. Jesus replied and said, I'll tell you who your neighbor is. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers. And they stripped him, and they beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, verse 32, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion. And he came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast, and he brought him to an inn, and he took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him, and whatever else you may spend, I will repay you. I'm just listing about 10 things the neighbor did. He tells this man, in answer to the question, who is my neighbor? I need to tell you a story. Now, I will not overly commentate this story. The truth is, it's a pretty simple story. He starts with the most likely candidate. The Levites were the most pious and godly, quote, people in the entirety of the Jerusalem region. They could have quoted all of the book of Exodus and Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and so they know the idea of love God and love your neighbor like nobody else. But when it came time to show it, he walked by on the other side of the road. This was his brother. That's not a Samaritan laying there. That's a Jew just like him. But he's got something else to do. He knows, watch me now, he knows the truth. He failed to put it upon display. Make sense? So then the second guy is a Levite. And so that's going a bit more generic. It's sort of like the man who most likely should have helped didn't. And so then this Levite, maybe he would help. All priests are Levites, not all Levites are priests. But the Levite, he walks on the other side as well. This guy certainly would stop. It's his brother. The Levite knows the law. In fact, in the book of Leviticus, we learn that Levites, even if they weren't priests, were preachers. So you basically have me walking down the side of the road. I would say it'd be like one of your shepherds here. Mr. Jimmy's walking down the side of the road. There's somebody there, and he just walks on by. Sorry, Mr. Jimmy. He's in his nice car. And then I go down this. I mean, certainly Mr. Jimmy or I would help this guy, but we don't. But then comes this Samaritan. And the Samaritan is completely different than the Jewish man. If those guys wouldn't help him after he'd been robbed and effectively left for dead, certainly this man wouldn't, but he did. And he did wonderfully. He started with compassion. He came to him, bandaged his wounds, poured oil, put him on his own beast, walked him to the inn, gave them money, told them to put it on my account and I will help you. And he did all of these things. And here is what we learn from that simple story. Who is my neighbor? Number one, your neighbor is not just someone you know. We will do beautifully in Christ. We will see evangelism doors. There are a lot of sick and dying people out there who physically look fine, who've been ravaged by the wares of this world. We will see a change in our evangelistic spirit. We will see a change in the way we give. We will see a change in where we target our compassion. Sometimes in my life, I feel like I walk around and I've only got 2 ounces of compassion to use today, and so I need to find the proper candidate. So I kind of reserve it for my inner circle. He said, look, your neighbor to whom you should show compassion is not just someone you know. You go to work tomorrow or school or no school in the summer, but whatever you have going on, except for Dalton, he's got school in the summer. Wherever you go, every person you see, every person standing in an elevator next to you, every person in the vehicle, this one's going to be personally indicting, in the vehicle in front of you driving too slowly, every single human being is your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. Point number one, It's not just someone you know. Look, the Samaritan and the Jew did not know each other. There's a pretty good chance that the priest, maybe not that the priest knew the Jewish man, but that the Jewish man probably knew the priest. It's kind of like a lot of people know the preacher. Preacher might not know everyone. And so that guy had to kind of walk by like this. But the man who helped him didn't know him. Here's a second thought. Your neighbor's not just somebody like you. I think sometimes we meet people that we don't know, and we instantly sort of have this connection with them because they are like us. I experience that a lot. I have the opportunity about a half a dozen times a year to go and preach at different churches in different areas. And in the last few years, I've had a chance to get out of Texas a little bit and learn how much I love it. You know, the queso's white in the East. That's, we can talk about that later. And meet Christians here and meet Christians there. And I don't know them. We don't know each other. And I hear some sad stories, and I hear about people in some difficult circumstances, but I'm instantly drawn to them, and I sit down with them, and I meet with them. I don't care what city or state I'm in, because we have something in common. I mean, they're Christians like me, and so we instantly sort of start from there. Listen to me. Your neighbor is not just somebody like you. In fact, your neighbor is somebody entirely unlike you. We're not going to get into the history here, but if you went back, say, to John 4, when Jesus interacted with that Samaritan woman, there's some indication there that a Samaritan and a Jew would not converse the way those two converse. She was nothing like him, like at all. Not in gender, not in culture, not in faith, nothing. But she was his neighbor, and he shared the gospel with her. Your neighbor is not someone like you. And I tell you, to really change the way you behave, the way you see your life, the way you consider, do I have evangelistic opportunities in Lindale, Texas? Is there an opportunity to show the second greatest commandment? When you start looking not just to strangers, but to people who look different than you, who have different economic backgrounds than you, where it looks like there's no way the two of you should ever have a conversation, and you stop and you look at them and you say, that is my neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. And I'll tell you this, it's not just about getting something out of it. Why would anyone go out of their way to do something for someone that they don't know, but more than that, not only do they not know them, but someone entirely different than them? I think I know why someone might do that, because maybe we'll get something out of it. I'll go help a stranger and sort of cross new barriers and go out of my comfort zone, because maybe in the end they'll pay me back, or maybe in the end I'll get some of that good old pride of life respect out of it, get my name in the paper, and I get something out of it. Look, he got nothing out of it. He didn't want anything out of it. You know, you go and you meet with the guy and you use your own Band-Aids. That's no big deal. A few cents, no big deal there. Pour some oil and wine on them, but don't pour it all, you know, just a little bit. Make sure you save some, right? And you put them on your own beast and you really feel like you've absolutely just given your life at this point. You bring them to an end. You take out 2 days' wages. You can do the math on that wherever you work. You take 2 days' wages. That's serious. And you just give it. But in the end, you're hoping, hey, maybe this guy's got rich parents. Or maybe he's got wealth that I don't know about, and I'm going to get a card in the mail. I guess they had the mail back then. He said, no, not only do I not want it back, but if this guy needs anything else, you just write it down, and I'll come and I'll pay it. Here's what I want you to understand. Your neighbor is not just someone who can do something for you. In fact, if I'm doing something for someone because I believe that that someone can help me, who do I really love? I love me. And I'm going to invest a little bit of time in you, hoping that me gets something out of it. Love God. Love your neighbor. There's no third commandment. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Juggle them as you please. Love God, love your neighbor. Let me just tell you, life's going to change for you if you've not considered this much in the past. If this week every single person that you see and come in contact with, no matter their ethnicity, no matter their cultural background, no matter their income level, no matter what they're wearing, James talks about that. People in the church in James, people in the church treating those who dress well better than those who dress poorly. My neighbor. And if I start thinking about what I can do to show that I am a neighbor, expecting nothing in return. First of all, that is one of the most wonderful feelings of all Christianity. When you hit a point of compassion for a total stranger, that you want to help them, and the last thing on earth you want is anything back. Who is my neighbor? It is not just someone you know. It is not just someone like you. And it is certainly not just someone who can help you in return. We'll go back to Luke chapter 10. When he gets to the end, he's really answered two questions here. The first one is, who's your neighbor? And he gets us out of our comfort zone. Big life shift for some. But then, of course, he goes into sort of articulating the way that the Samaritan went and helped the man. And when he gets to the end of the story in verse 36, he says, which one of these three do you think... Now, he doesn't say is a neighbor, because the answer would be all of them. They're all neighbors, whether they treat each other well or not. But he's gone on to something else. Which one of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell in the robber's hands? And he said, the man said, the one who showed mercy toward him. We are all neighbors. No matter how you treat that person on the street or the people in your own family you've been fighting with for 20 years, they're still your neighbor. It doesn't change because we're not being neighborly. And we will still, on the last day, be judged on the principle of two basic ideas, love God and love that person. That's how we're going to be judged on the last day. Take that home with you, please. But the question isn't just, who is my neighbor and upon which relationships will I be judged in the last day? The question really now is, how do I prove that I am one? And I hope that's you this morning. I hope you're thinking, all right, I get it. I got to get out of my circle. I need to expand that bubble, pop that bubble, and start seeing every human being is equally important if I can help them. But now I want to know more. I want to know, do I love my neighbor? And am I proving to be one? And that's where we'll finish this lesson today. How do I know I love them? Now, I think I know the answer. Because I think that I've given it a whole bunch of times. Do you love your neighbor, people sort of outside of your inner circle and the people who do things for you? I most certainly do. How do you know you love them? What do we usually say? I pray for them. I pray for Aikman Smith. Thanks for the posts about Aikman, the little boy who's really, really sick in Dallas. I pray for Aikman. I even pray for my enemies. I pray, and it's the only way I get through it, folks, I pray for the person in the car in front of me on 849. Who's acting like they're going to turn at every turn. I pray for them. Then I pray for me. I know you can leave here and probably be okay with that. But I'm convinced we can do better. I'm convinced that love our neighbor in many cases that we've written off in times past, and I'm self-incriminating here with that statement, can go beyond just offering prayer and can tangibly do something to make a difference in that neighbor's life. How do I prove to be a neighbor? I have three things to suggest to you. Number one, I prove to be a neighbor when I am moved by emotion to make a difference in the life of someone who is not close to me. Now, we get this on the inner circle thing. If one of my children is hurt, I try to fix it. If somebody I've known my whole life, who's always been a terrific friend to me, needs somebody to come move him and pack up his, I'm there. I'll do it. I am moved with compassion to help somebody. But to love my neighbor means people that I'm not so connected with triggering some emotion. Go with me to Galatians. We will finish our study by sort of taking 3 points from our quick story that we just read and applying it to a few basic principles from Galatians chapter 5 and chapter 6. You remember the fruit of the Spirit, right? I would just suggest to you in terms of application of this lesson that will end in just a moment, if you're interested in how to love your neighbor and what that looks like, please take some time and memorize the 9 pieces that make up the fruit of the Spirit. Loving your neighbor means not just hanging on to these 9 things and giving them out one at a time if you clear some threshold or something. Love my neighbor means all 9 of these. Love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and, yes, self-control, and giving that out without any prerequisites. You don't have to love me first. You don't have to be lovable. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to know me. We don't need any previous credit. You can be the most different person in the world, but I have 9 things that I want to give to you. I am moved by emotion. Look in chapter 6, verse 9. Let us, Galatians 6 and 9, not lose heart in doing good. For in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. How many of us have believed that three times in one place will get us forgiven over one portion in the other? If I just triple love my brethren, the Lord will overlook the fact that I do almost nothing for people outside of my inner circle. That somehow a lot of this will get me past deficiency in that. Love God, love your neighbor. Those laws never change. Let us not lose heart in doing good for all men. What does that mean, do good? Well, that's why I had you start in chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. I think he's talking about love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and all of those qualities and being willing to share it. But we have to have a heart for it. Otherwise, we leave a lesson like this and we think, boy, he's right. I'm going to be in big trouble. I haven't done anything for anybody in 5 years that I didn't already know. And we go out and we like throw a 20 at somebody. Hang on a minute. Proving to be a neighbor isn't action first. It's emotionally based. I mean, that's your love for God, right? You love for God because you have an emotional outpouring of affection for God. And then it lives and it breathes and it worships. That's what it's supposed to mean to love our neighbor. Folks, we need to make sure that we have a heart for the lost, a heart for the stranger, a heart for the destitute. I preached on institutionalism a few weeks ago. And I get it. I mean, I'm as strong a proponent of restricting the contribution to where it ought to be used as anybody you've ever met in your life. But if we think an extra 50 there will get us out of helping somebody out there, we missed it completely. Love your neighbor from your heart with emotion. Number two, first of all, it said he felt compassion for this guy. Then I prove to be a neighbor when I'm willing to expend some energy. And this is why I say that praying for someone on the street corner is really important. Or if somebody calls you, or if somebody's treated you wrong, or if somebody's just destroying their life, and you pray for somehow it to be turned around, that's a terrific expenditure of your energy. But I think we can probably do more. This man expended energy in a terrific way. He stopped what he was doing. Anybody ever not busy? Is there anybody in this room who can say, right now I've got nothing else to do? We're very busy. Trust me, that guy on the road, just as busy as you are. Stopped what he was doing. That's an expenditure of your time. Then he went and expended energy to put a bandage on the man. Then he expended more energy by walking beside the beast. Then he actually had a financial expenditure to take care of him. I prove to be a neighbor when I am willing to expend something of me for you, though I do not know you, though you are not like me, and though you cannot give me anything in return. And so that takes us back to chapter 5, verses 22 and 23 of Galatians. Expending love, expending joy. I'm going to kind of say this. Hannah is going to be, I think, teaching one of the ladies' classes coming up. A lot of our ladies do the classes, and she wanted to talk about kindness. And we're setting it up this way in three circles. Kindness is an expenditure of some emotion. You feel kindness towards someone, and you do something about it. Something actually happens. And so we're creating three circles. I mean, she gave me the nod when I gave her the idea, like, yeah, Dad, that's a good idea. But it may be one of those teenage nods, and it may not actually show up in the class, but she acted like it was a good idea. How do we show kindness to our family and our friends? It's easy. It's good to remember every once in a while and do something. How about just our acquaintances or our passing connections? But what we're going to talk about, what I think she'll talk about in that class, is an actual way that you expend for your inner circle, an actual thing that you do for someone that's sort of an infrequent friend, and then something you would do for someone who you've never even met. The expenditure of love, joy, patience, kindness. And then here's the last thing, we've already said it. I prove to be a neighbor when I care. I prove to be a neighbor when I invest myself in them. And I prove to be a neighbor when I'm undeterred by expense. I wish I didn't have to make this point. I hope you guys realize by now, I think a week from now I will have been here 1 year. Every time I get like this in a sermon, it's because I've just been kind of pounding on myself for a week and I just need to get it out there. This point's here because this point applies to this guy. Boy, I'll do a lot. And I'm willing to pray and think about them and read about their posts and really hope that things work out for them. But what about when it actually is about to cost me something? You actually have to pull money out of your pocket to change that person's condition Some of us are all in until it costs us something. Of course, that cost could be time. And for many of us, time is even more valuable than what's in your pocket. I think I have $3 in my pocket, so that's definitely the case. What about when it really is going to take some level you have down just for the purpose, watch me now, just for the purpose of raising their level, for no other purpose? Galatians 6, verse 1. Brethren, even if anyone is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself so that you too will not be tempted. Bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. What law? Love God, love your neighbor. Now, I know he's talking about brethren here. Bear a brother's burden. You see a brother in sin. You see them hurting. Go bear their burden. But he comes right back in verse 9 and says, do not lose heart and do good, for you will reap. Let us do good to all people. Bear the burden of another. And listen, I think this is where evangelism becomes key. Yes, bearing the burden of another may be actually taking money out of your pocket and handing it to a stranger whom you think you can genuinely help. But it might be handing them the message of the gospel. I'm hoping that of all the things that come out of this lesson this morning, a more evangelistic spirit will be at the top of the list. People I don't know, people not like me, I will expend. It reminds me of Acts chapter 3, I think, when the lame man or the beggar begged Peter and John, please give me money. And they said, silver and gold I do not have, but check this out. And they just healed him. Now, don't try that. But I mean, if you can do it, do it. But the point is this, I may not have anything in my pocket, but I can help you. And you're worth helping. And I can expend energy and expend time and come to your house and sit down with you so that we can talk about the gospel, because you are my neighbor. A neighbor feels for people, all people, and is willing to expend something for it. Now, you might be thinking, or somebody in the room thinking, what's this guy saying? Doesn't he realize the implication of what he's saying? Are you saying that every street corner in Smith County, when I see some homeless guy holding a sign, that I've got to reach in my wallet, I grab a little bitty Bible and a little pamphlet and all the money in my pocket and just hand it to the guy on every street corner in Smith County? Is that what you're saying, Chris? First of all, let's not make that argument. Nobody here is at risk of going broke helping homeless people. I promise you, you're not going to see so many people on so many street corners, it's just going to be dead broke, and now you're on a street corner. I've never seen that happen. It's not going to happen to you. We're at far more risk of passing them all up than we are of helping them all. I'm not saying that. Look, I don't know. You've got to investigate the story. You need to find out about this person. It's not just about taking $20. You say, well, wait a minute now. So if I hand them $20, they may go buy booze with it. So I can't do that. I mean, it's just some homeless guy on the corner up here. I can't just hand him money. He may go do something. Probably should pass that one up. Hang on a minute. I don't care if they're going to buy booze with it or not. Are you ready for this? That is still your neighbor, isn't it? He's no less your neighbor because he's a mess. He's no less. Love that guy like yourself. Now, giving him $20 that he goes and buys something with would be a disservice to him. So you start thinking, man, this is hard. This is actually pretty hard. You're saying what I'm really going to have to do is go park my car over here and go meet the guy and ask to sit down with the guy and hear the guy's story and find out his genuine need. And by the time we've thought through all that, we're already 7 miles down the road and almost home to go sit on our couches and watch HGTV. I'm not even saying you got to pull over and go meet with the guy. What I'm saying is we ought to be the people more inclined to do that than to out of some fear. Remember, they're not like you. We already established that, probably. Than to help them or to pass them up. Love God, love your neighbor. You remember Jesus on the cross? You want to talk about love of neighbor? Did Jesus love the people closest to him? He did. Remember when he said, behold, John, your mother, and to his mother he said, your son. Jesus took care of his inner circle. They never got overlooked. It's not like helping the world meant that your family would get overlooked. And then Jesus sort of went to that second circle, and he was willing to help a guy who was just a sinner, a thief, and about to die for it. When the thief said, would you take me to paradise? He said, I will. But then Jesus broke all the walls, all the barriers, all the restrictions. And he reached out to sinners like you and like me, completely unworthy, homeless, corner-bound mess makers. And he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Would to God that we would have that kind of mercy on people who what they really need, are you ready? They need you. They need the gospel to turn their lives around. Love God, love your neighbor. Go back to Luke 10 and we'll close this lesson in Luke chapter 10. Verse 36, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor? And to the man who fell in the robber's hands, and the fellow said, verse 37, the one who showed mercy toward him. Then Jesus said to him, go and do the same. He's answered two questions. Who is my neighbor? Anyone, anywhere, anytime. How do I love my neighbor? If the opportunity avails itself, I feel for them, I build a relationship with them, I do something for them. Go and do the same. All right, quick story and then we're done. I told Summer I'd only preach 32 minutes today. That was about 4 minutes ago. So I'm working on this lesson this week, right? Typing it up, thinking about it. And I get a call on our little phone. We've got a phone up there. And it had a number on it. And it was Ross Charnell, local number. And I thought, firstly, I don't know Ross Charnell. I know it's somebody here locally. And I started going through it. You know, he probably wants something. He's probably got some need. He's probably calling 10 churches, and I'm church number 8. I'm working on a lesson right now. I got a lot going on. But I was just kind of looking over the phone. I thought, but, you know, usually I answer. I'll go ahead and answer. So I picked it up. First of all, it was Miss Charnell Ross. It was the way the wording on the thing. And she said, do you guys help people pay their bills? And so you'd be proud of me. I gave her that 15-second talk that all conservative preachers give. Well, we don't have an account here for that, and we're not set up for general benevolence, and that's not exactly the way we do things, but I really appreciate you calling. I did not want to help her. I was busy. And it was just another call that we get twice every week. But I said what I always say. I said, I tell you what, why don't you let me take down your number? And if something comes together, you ever said that? If something ever comes together, like money falls from the sky and lands on the desk with Miss Ross's name on it, I'll call you back. And she said, just before you go, I just want you to know that our water line broke, and so my water bill is double what it usually is, and my grandson lives with me, and we don't have the money. And I was listening. I'm not a heartless guy. I was definitely listening. And she said, and it's just, we're going through really tough times. I'm a member of the Swan Church of Christ, and in the back of my head, I'm thinking, yeah, they always throw some Church of Christ name at me. And I said, I'll call you. And I put the phone down, and I looked up at that. I don't know how providence works, but I know that timing is a part of it. I put the phone down, and I stared at that for 30 seconds. And I called her back, and I said, sure, I'll come to your house, and went and got a little bit of money for her. And she said, I'd like to meet you here. But then I started thinking about, I had two mistakes. I'm only telling you this because of my personal mistakes. First of all, I didn't want to help her. I didn't want to answer the phone. I didn't want to do anything. Secondly, when I decided that I would while she was driving here, I was thinking, maybe we'll get something out of this. Maybe I'll get a chance to study with her grandson, Tristan. Maybe they'll come and start visiting here some. Maybe this will open the door. Maybe it'll spread a little good word and people will say, hey, we should come visit the Lindell Church. So I went from, check this out, I went from not wanting to help the person to helping them, but hoping I get something out of it. That's two strikes and I'm out. Why should I help that person? Because she is my neighbor. And she had a need, and she came here and she wanted me to look at it. She showed me that bill. She wanted me to check that. I said, I don't need. She said, no, I want you to hold it in your hands. She had a need, and I could fill that need. And that, my good brethren, is all that matters. She's my neighbor. I feel bad about that exchange, and I want to do better, and I hope to follow up with her and do better just for the heart of it, and I'm not going to tell you anything about it because I don't want to be pharisaical and telling you what I'm doing. But I only told you that story because I felt badly about my attitude. But I'm telling you, the world's going to open up for us when we understand the message of Jesus. We show mercy on all, and we go and we do the same. If there's anybody here who feels deficient in this area and you just need some love of your own, you need to be encouraged, you need to experience mercy, you want to be forgiven of those chains and you want to get outside of those barriers, then we want to give you that opportunity. Maybe you don't have a great story to tell because you're not yet a Christian. Let me tell you, you come up out of that water as a child of God and you can't wait to tell people and you don't care who they are or where they're from. If you're ready for that fire to get started, your neighbor could use your faith tomorrow. Have some to give them as together we stand and sing.